Now, as your father probably told you, my name is Matt Foley, and I am a motivational speaker. Now, let's get started by letting me give you a little bit of a scenario of what my life is all about. First off, I am 35 years old, I am divorced, and I live in a van down by the river.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of Muskies on Tap. Welcome to episode 72 here. It is the month of September, and fishing is starting to heat up in a good way, and also it's still hot outside. The full moon has been great, but this heat has been getting these fish all in sorts of funk, getting them in deeper weed edges, getting them up in 1 to 3 feet of water, all sorts of funky stuff, but we'll get into that later. We're going to have a special guest on here tonight. We'll have Taylor Flannery back on. He was back on episode 49, if you want to listen to the first one that we had him on. And before we get going and get his interview going, let's introduce the other Muskies on Tap members here tonight. We got none other than my brother, Max. Max, how you doing tonight?
Doing good. Excited to be here. Coming off a nice Packers victory last weekend. Couldn't have been happier with how the boys performed. With J-Love sitting on the bench. Malik Willis, man, what can you say? Just a true dog, every sense of the word. So, yeah, good squad. Excited about how the season progresses here. But on a more fishy note, my eyes have been just glued to the weather app last, 48 hours. Seeing what that extended forecast is looking like, because Gus, we are eyeing up the true first cool down of the season starting next week. Looks like the bottom falls out sometime on Saturday night, heading into Sunday, and I am up north all next week for the PMTT Championship on the Eagle River Chain. Looking forward to that, and this weather has got me extra excited to get up there and do some fishing. So I'm not sure how much we'll talk about that here tonight, seeing as we still are about a week out from that all transpiring. But yeah, looking forward to getting back up, doing some fishing. Think it's going to be a lot of fun. So without further ado, let me introduce our third co-host here of the Muskies on Tap podcast. And that is none other than my dearest friend, Mr. Brian Eckel. Brian, how are we doing tonight?
I'm doing terrific. Little hump day action today. This week's flying by. Yeah, like you said, I've been just like you looking at that forecast, and it looks like Saturday is going to be our last day with 80 degree weather this year. Likely be spending it on the golf course.
Knock on wood.
Be fishing. Yeah, so had a good weekend last weekend. More golf for myself. The back seems to have healed up enough. might be a little while before I get back out on the boat. We've been doing a little musky battle chat as that's approaching us slowly, figuring out some specifics on how that whole operation is going to go down, but looking forward to that eventually here this fall. And yeah, not a whole lot else to report on my front. Yeah, shout out to Malik Willis, though, an absolute professional of the game, goes about his business the right way. He's not glamorous out there, but he gets the job done. I mean, for him to have learned the playbook in 3 weeks is pretty fascinating, and hats off to him.
Kind of reminds me of you a little bit, maybe lacking a little bit in the skill. A little bit in the skill category, but just gets in there, does the right things.
I thought you were gonna say freak athlete.
Oh yeah, no.
Yeah,
yeah. Photographic memory, freak athlete. just to name a few.
Yeah.
That was great. But a Gus, dog. How before our guest hops on here, what's been new with you up in the North Woods during this heat up? Sounds like fish have been a little bit funky lately, but you've been able to pop a few decent ones and staying on top of them, from what it sounds like.
Yeah, there's been a few days that were definitely a struggle bus there back when we had like 80 to 85 degree days and flat calm. We were getting basically 0 mile an hour winds for a couple of those days, and those were tough. We were seeing some fish Getting them to bite was a different story. It would take under definitely some sort of darkness, which is pretty much on those days only sunrise, sunset, or night. And I did not have the luxury to night fish. Looked like it was definitely some good night fishing weather. If you got out and night fished, definitely probably helped your case on, getting fish in the net. But I think they started getting used to it. We had that heat up after like a quick cold snap the other week, and it's just been hot ever since. And it's like been a giant, not a giant south wind, but it's been a south wind for like what seems like an eternity, but I want to say it's a good 10 days straight of south wind and a lot of heat, mainly been like 78 to 82 every single day. And finally, these fish, I think the full moon has really fired them up. There was a day or two where they were only eating rubber, but otherwise a combination of rubber and like smaller staggers, like the Huntsie tail bangers have been extremely good. A couple of the frenzies I know have been very good. We always throw our good old fashioned double eights as well. I haven't really been throwing many single blades nor getting any action when we have. Top water's been a little hush hush quiet in my boat, but I know some other people that have been getting some on them, and I'm pretty sure who we're having on, Taylor, has been getting a couple on top water recently, so we'll check in with him and how he's getting it done there. But overall, it's not bad. We kind of creep back into that 71 to 72, 72 and a half even water temps for peak of the day, but the nights are long enough now that. And we're still getting, 50 some degree nights that it's keeping it just under 70 in the mornings. So, I think the consistency, like I said, is what helped. Prior to that, when I was talking about that flat calm day, I'm pretty sure that morning it was like 64 degree water temps in the morning, and by 11 or noon, it shot up to 71 or 72, which is
Oh,
not good. That's a
that's
lot.
gross.
Yeah,
That's gross.
terrible. It's yeah, it was not ideal. I was just sweating out there, and but I've been kind of going out here and there. I was looking at my calendar last recent outings, and I was either fishing a full day or taking a full day off. So I've been kind of on and off the water lately.
Yeah,
But
well, let me ask you
went
this.
on.
You're fishing in a local tournament, Paul's Pro-Am this weekend up on the chain in Eagle River. I think the kind of a funny ordeal, seeing as the PMTT championship is the following week, so it's going to be kind of interesting, back-to-back weekends in a tournament on the chain. And then to throw a little wrinkle in the whole mix here, you're fishing with our good buddy Clayton Spies, who will be a competitor boat the following weekend. So what walk me through this. What's going to go down? I mean, are you guys going to be both, sheltering spots from each other, or is it just one of those things you're going to go try to win it and then, figure it out for the next week?
I mean, I think it's for sure something. I mean, we're in it to win it. We're not, I mean,
Right
for
on.
sure.
Yeah,
I
of
love,
course.
yeah, getting into tournaments, and that's definitely the goal there. But I mean, first things first, as you already know, there's no secrets on the chain. Every time I think I got something up
None.
my sleeve out there, somebody just weasels their way into that spot one day, and I'm like, oh boy, they know about that or something, or they're onto that big fish, right when you think you know about a big fish and nobody else does, you hear about either somebody catching it or raising it that week as well, and you're like, okay, dang it. But I think personally, the weather is going to change enough that what we're doing even tomorrow or the day before this Paul's Pro-Am is going to change. I mean, it looks like it's going to be upper 70s still on Saturday, and then Sunday is when it falls out and goes down into like the 40s and 60s as the high. So I think what's going to go down in that tournament is a team that is going to do something different between Saturday and Sunday and gets fish both days, unless
Is
somebody's
Paul's
able to clean house on enough on
right?
one of the days, if
Is
somebody
Paul's
figures
Pro-Am
out.
2 full days?
Sort of. The Sunday is like a shortened day, just kind of like a PMTT qualifier, and then the PMTT is 2.5 days. But Paul's prime, I think, is like 7-4 and 7-1 for Sunday, something like that. I could be off by the timing. They might have it a little bit later because it's fall now and dark. Well, no, it probably starts at 7, I would guess.
That is all very interesting timing with Paul's pro-am. I mean, with having a pretty prominent cold front show up for the second day, it looks like, and then also week prior to the PMTT championship. I'm curious if, you know, Paul's pro-am is going to pop off. There's going to be a ton of fish caught, or, you know, if the pressure from this tournament will affect PMTT. I don't know. How many boats are in this Paul's pro-am? Is it a pretty big tournament?
It's not as big as it used to be. It's probably going to be around that 50 boat mark. And the championship, it looks like they had 37 make it or qualify for the championship, whether or not all 37 want to show up or not. I would assume pretty much all of them show up. I don't know why you wouldn't, unless something comes up travel wise and you're a team coming from afar. But no, I mean, the chain is kind of this anomaly system where no matter how many freaking leagues you put out there twice a week and how many tournaments you do a year, there's got to be at least 3, 4, 5 or whatever. It just keeps producing. These fish just keep coming out of nowhere. I get plenty of reports of people catching fish over and over again. I don't know. I think it'll be good for both of them. You know, the weather change, we'll just kind of wait and see how that plays out, because it's definitely on a pretty good pattern right now. But I've already been talking to Clayton. I'm like, we got to probably be ready to switch up our pattern and for Sunday if the weather's going to change that much, because it's just not, it's not going to hold. I mean, it's too much of a change in one day.
Yeah, it's gonna be awesome. I'm really excited to see what the results are from Paul's pro-am. I think, you know, most of the people that are fishing in the championship the following week will probably be curious to see how everyone was doing in that tournament the weekend before, I would have to guess.
Yeah,
just with
there's a couple
tournaments like that.
There's definitely a couple local sticks that are in the PMTT championship that are also doing Paul's pro-am. So I think they're using it because, like, they'd probably go and pre-fish anyways on the weekend. So might as well sign up for a tournament and maybe just try and win something beforehand. But
yeah. Oh, I mean, it's going to be a lot of fun. I'll be following along with you guys closely, as I'm not going to get up north probably until Monday. And I know, you know, with how much time we have out there, our pre-fishing is going to be a little bit different than how we normally do it, because most of the tournaments we've been in on the PMTT have been first lakes for us for the most part, or, you know, very limited knowledge on them. So it'll be good for you to get out there. Hopefully you guys hammer some fish, do really well. I think you definitely might, you know, you guys are, you're used to fishing with Clayton. You guys fish and league together, so it'll just be like another, you know, not the first rodeo type deal.
No, and yeah, like I said, most of the spots we all kind of fish as well. And to be honest, there's some spots that he likes more than I do, and there's some spots that I like more than he does. But, you know, I think together we'll be able to put a game plan together and do something during Paul's Pro-Am. And then the following week, I think by then you and I, Max, will have a completely different game plan. Yeah, maybe it'll stem off of what we do at Paul's Pro-Am, and maybe it does as well for Clayton and then his partner Nick for the PMTT. But like we've always seen, I mean, really on any body of water, but especially the chain, I don't know how many times quite a few that people have caught fish directly behind me, and I've caught fish directly behind people. So it's really anybody's game. Timing and placement of your lures is everything. So
yeah,
I think it'll be a good time.
No
I'm
doubt.
Looking forward to all this tournament stuff. So we'll have a ton to talk about in the
yeah, I'd say so.
Next upcoming podcast. And then, we got the Wisconsin Muskie Battle late in October. We'll be chit-chatting about closer to when things get more finalized there. But I think before we ramble too much, maybe you can talk a little bit more about some things on the outro. But let's dial up that conversation we have with Taylor. And we'll catch you guys there. All right, here on the line, we got Taylor Flannery with Muskie Guarantee Guide Service, Northern Wisconsin, serving Vilsack and Oneida County. Taylor's been on the water a whole bunch. We had him back on in, I believe I said April, like episode 49 was when we first had Taylor on. Definitely check that out if you want to hear more and you enjoy the podcast here tonight. But before I get any further, Taylor, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. Just getting off the water. Got a lot of action today. A lot of sunshine the last 4 days. That's been pretty brutal, but definitely feeling that.
Oh yeah. The sun has been shining for, God, what feels like 2 weeks now. I could be just over exaggerating, but I don't think we've seen a drop of rain up here in our neck of the woods in a good bit. I think a lot of water flow is down, but man, what have you been seeing out there in the water with this heat here?
Yeah, it's things are kind of all over the place. Whenever it was last week, we had that cold front come through and we had down to like 62, 63 degree temps, and those fish all started sliding up shallow and we were getting a really good rubber bite. And I mean, 5 foot of weeds, you know, soft, you know, shallow rocks. And then it got real warm here. Now it's kind of like some fish have stayed up in the really shallow stuff. I mean, we saw fish today in 3-4 feet of water. And then you're also seeing them out on the side imaging on the outside of the structure in that 15 to 20 foot yet, just hanging out. So they're not concentrated. They're kind of all over the place at the time. But I think we get some weather or something coming in, and that'll push those other fish up shallow too. But yeah, it's all over right now.
Yeah, I can definitely agree on that part. The consistency has been a little off with the heat up, but we've had one thing that's been consistent, which I'm curious to see what you have seen out in the water, is we've had a south wind for what feels like a long, long time, along with this heat, which is why we're getting this heat. Have you seen anything where you're going to windblown specific, or are you looking in slack water stuff, or are you paying attention to that at all this past week? Because I know I definitely have.
Yeah, it's definitely everything has been, I'm focusing on, you know, what's been getting blown for the last how long. And you can almost call your shots. Today, actually, I was like, the fish is going to come, you know, right here off of this little turn, off of this point. And sure thing, we got drilled right there. I mean, it's nice being able to just say, yes, this is where the fish are going to be positioned based off of that wind direction for however many days in a row. Definitely a thing. Kind of eliminates half the lake too, you know, not saying that the fish aren't going to be on the other side of the structure, but the active fish that are actually feeding are definitely going to be up, you know, on that windblown side.
Yeah, I think I fully agree there. I think it's the last few days that I noticed big time windblown stuff because of how long it's been with the south wind. But prior to that, I think we were getting some fish going in some weird spots, and wind didn't really matter because there wasn't much wind. But now that we have gotten the wind, I'm definitely seeing the same thing. I just wasn't sure if maybe you found a bite in the slack water, because every once in a while I don't mind checking that out just to see, you know, keep the fish honest, see if some fish got lazy and didn't want to go to the wind and sitting up shallow in the slack water. But I haven't really found much doing that at all.
Yeah, we found there was one, we had one come in pretty hot on a Hunzi tail today that was actually tucked behind a big island. And that one, I mean, there was no wind at all. I mean, it was pretty hot right there. But other than that, that's the only fish. I think we saw, 11 fish or something like that today. And it was, everything was wind blown points and little inside turns and things like that. But a lot of fish on rocks yet.
That's good.
So with the big cold front coming this weekend, hitting on Sunday, I mean, the Paul's Pro-Am is going on. I'm sure other people will be up there fishing. What do you expect these fish to do when this cold front hits, and how will you kind of game plan for that?
I would say those fish are going to push shallow, and I think they're going to be active for sure, whether you have a moon or not. I think we're going to have some weather coming in with that cold front. Any kind of overcast skies or anything like that, I would be throwing top water. I absolutely love top water in September. on a cold front, that's one of my go-tos. Cannonball Jr. has been getting wrecked about every single day. That's pretty nice. Flattail, that was a good one too. Otherwise, just any kind of bait that you can get shallow and kind of rip through the weeds, you know, a Medusa, Medusas, reg dogs, the pit bulls, them have been getting hit too. So I'd get up right tight to that stuff and kind of cast a slot, you know, throw gliders over that stuff. That'd be a great option as well. But yeah, I wouldn't really be focusing too much on the outside stuff anymore. Once you get that cold front, I think it will push everything up shallow and be active.
Right on. So now people got a good game plan for what to do moving forward. One of the main reasons why we brought you on here tonight, since we're about to experience that cold front and fall's kind of inching closer and closer, I think we wanted to kind of do a comprehensive recap on how the summer went. And a few things, you know, I'd love to hear from you and Gus too. Feel free to chime in on, you know, maybe just how the overall summer went for you, some highlights from the summer. And then I think we're maybe going to even move into a little bit of a, you know, maybe some bait MVPs and also contrast that. Hopefully it won't make too many bait makers mad, but contrast that with maybe some baits that just were total duds this summer that were really good the year prior. Not quite into the fuck that bait segment, but you know, just things that
we haven't brought that maybe, back in a while.
Just maybe baits that like you thought were going to be really good again this year and that just totally petered out. But let's start with this. How was the summer? And then if you want to touch on a few highlights, that'd be great.
Yeah, it was a great summer. We saw a lot of big fish. A lot of fish, you know, a lot of bigger ones got off, which is unfortunate. A lot of fish in that like 34 to like 40 inch range. I mean, that's kind of common northern Wisconsin stuff, but fish were right where they needed to be. Weed lines, rock bars, really good bite, which something that I don't really throw a lot. Bucktails were absolutely on fire this year, all year still are. The 7-8 bangers from Hunzi Tail. I've probably caught 60 fish on them things already this season. It's just absolutely incredible. They've been doing good. Probably the first, I think it was like the first like 17 fish caught on the Hunzi Tails were on the cast. So to me, that's telling me that those fish were really, really liking the vibration of that bait versus eating it on the first turn in the eight or something like that. So yeah, just them were incredible for me and still are. That's my guy got drilled tonight on a Hunzi Tail as well. So no surprise, but yeah, overall it was a great summer. Kind of hard transition into fall here that seems like it's August yet, but really looking forward to the fall and what that's going to bring too. So
nice. Yeah. Well, go ahead, Brian.
I was just going to say, before we get into some bait talk, I just wanted to ask, you don't have to name any lake names or anything to answer, but did you notice this year that some of your go-to lakes from last year just were not producing, or lakes that you maybe did decent on last year, you just had no luck on this year, a lake that seemed to have totally kind of changed faces this season? I know we talked about that on our last pod. And then if you did notice that, like what's kind of the reasoning you might, you know, tag along for why a lake just shuts off one season?
Honestly, everything that's been good to me this year was also good to me last year as well. And I get all over the place from Boulder Junction all the way down to like the Pelican Lake area. And I mean, I kind of follow a bite as it's happening. So I don't really run into a lot of like struggling a lot on one lake. You know, if it's not on, I just kind of leave it alone for a while and come back when I think it's going to be good. But I do have one lake in particular that I think you guys know which one it is, but catch a lot of big fish out of it. I don't fish it often. But last season, that one was not on at all. This year, I've got six fish over 47 out of that lake.
Ooh.
So yeah, it's been absolutely incredible. But the year before last, I had, I believe it was 8 fish over 45 out of that lake. So for northern Wisconsin, that's pretty solid. But no idea why it was off last year comparing to the other 2 years opposite of that.
So what were some highlights of your summer that you had?
Well, I would say the one that sticks out to me the most is I absolutely enjoy getting like youth involved in muskie fishing and just on the water in general. I had two young kids that came out with me, and both of those kids caught their first muskies that night. Just
Nice.
incredible. I mean, the smiles on their faces, it's awesome. That's something that I'm sure Gus gets this too, but I mean, you can't replace that with anything. It's pretty rewarding when that stuff happens. So, kids are talking about all the baits that they're gonna buy, and they're gonna make these baits, and they need rods for Christmas. And it's like, oh, you guys are so screwed. Yeah,
Yeah,
that's where it
ruined.
starts. So,
Absolutely ruined. Nice.
oh yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. I got a quick story for that. I won't, because we had great fishing when I had this crew out, but in particular, I had this kid. He was 13 years old, and then he had his grandpa with him, and we went out for 2 days. And he was so psyched. He somehow had all these musky lures already accumulated, and he had one fish under his belt up in Canada, but he was already just hooked. He's watching all the YouTube videos. He's diving fully into it. I mean, he's committing to the game, which at 13 is really, really cool to see. And he was casting super well and everything. And he was really liking the bait box I had, when I open up the wrecking rack and it's all full of baits. I think he wanted to, because I do the split ring to a solid ring system, so he wasn't really able to change them himself. And he wanted to switch baits every 4 to 8 minutes, so he had you beat, Brian, by quite a bit there.
I was gonna say, he knows what's up. They ain't biting, move on.
Yeah, well, after a while, he no, he was using a lot that was working, and then he would switch. And then finally, after we were getting some more follows on Dusas, he's like, fine, I'll throw a mini Dusa for longer than 6 minutes. And he had one up, and he was super pumped. But yeah, I know exactly what you mean on the enthusiasm that kids can show, and especially when fish at the bag. One of the days we got a tiger with him, and he was like screaming out like, thank you, because he just has always wanted to see one. And he was just pumped.
That's
It's cool to
awesome.
see.
So you mentioned, well, it sounds like it was a great summer for you. I mean, we've been obviously following along on social media and whatnot. It's been great to see the updates, the pictures. I love it all. So congrats on another great year. Let's do a little bait talk on what was working this year. Obviously, it sounds like the Huntsie tails were a huge play for you, but outside of that, what else was a superstar in your boat for this summer?
We crush a lot of fish on mid-sized Medusas and regular bulldogs. That's huge. The pit bull got some action as well. I don't throw a lot of the super big stuff until well, coming up here, when we get this cold snap or whatnot, I'll start throwing the mags and stuff a little more. But yeah, the mid-sized rubber, small rubber, that's always big time. The Cannonball Junior has been lights out. I know not a lot of people throw that, up in the Northwoods, but they definitely should. Even on days that are sunny and you have no right throwing top water whatsoever, if you got some wind, throw that Cannonball Junior out there and just let it rock. And we've had some nice fish on that one. But yeah, the Hansie tails, the 7-8 bangers, absolutely just on fire all season long. Besides that, I mean, caught a few on Suics, the classics, gliders early in the season, the Conklins, and then the Rusty's Customs. Those were doing well as well. But yeah, that's about the whole program I run. I don't really get too extravagant with it. Just old school and stuff that works. That's about it. No fancy
Yeah. Was
colors,
there
black, white, gold.
a specific bait that maybe worked well? last year that just wasn't the ticket this year, and it kind of sat on the bench for a lot of the season?
I guess I could kind of say a little bit of the Suic, the thriller. I mean, like I said, I caught a few fish on it, but it just wasn't doing what it usually does. I mean, those things are magic, but we are getting to the time of year when Suics really, shine, with the cold temps and cold water temps and whatnot. But I would say the Suic was kind of a downer, Debbie Downer this year. I think it's probably produced like six fish, maybe seven fish, but it's definitely been on tough days that's what's caught a fish, but kind of surprising. Usually a Suic produces a lot of fish for me. Other than that, maybe like a Fat Bastard. I have not actually had a lot of action on a Fat Bastard. The Dr. Evil did well and the Cannonball Jr. did well, but for whatever reason, that size just didn't do much for me. The Chaos Little Sister, that one, I had a lot of runtime on that one, but it did really well. So I'm not sure if they're just kind of getting used to, the vibration that the Fat Bastard's putting off or whatever it may be. A lot of people are throwing it, but could just be coincidence as well. I'm not sure.
Right. Yeah. And what you're allocating your time to, it is interesting to hear because the size profile of the CBJ, up in the North Woods seems big, but to hear, it's good to hear that thing is getting crushed. Because I think for us on a lot of the prop style baits, Fat Bastard or the Suic Nightwalker were kind of always my two go-tos. And we just kind of got, acquainted with the Cannonball Jr. and that thing was great when we got it, started running it, and it was like right away it got some action. But maybe quick, let's just go around the horn here. Gus, bait MVP of the summer and your least valuable bait.
Least valuable. I'll have to think about that because I was about to agree with, or I am going to agree with Taylor that the Suic has been very underwhelming this year. For Dive and Rise, we've just been able to get fish going on little navens or whatever you want to call them from Chaos, the 8-inch size. Those were getting fished going on really junky, cold front days kind of in July or early season kind of like June. But MVP, honestly, it's like looking back at the pictures for majority of fish that were caught, it was probably mid Dusa, maybe a reg Dusa, but I have to give it to the shallow version because I was running a lot of shallow versions this year and not adding weight. And if you can get them tuned correctly, and the big key with these is you cannot do long pulls or nothing with them. They're just going to start twisting like straight up of shallow weighted Dusa is going to start twisting. You got to hit them with like little slack line pops straight up, and you don't even have to hit it very hard. And those things freaking dance left and right like a glide bait, and then they just flutter and hang there. And that has been absolutely dynamite going over weeds, and you can easily drop them over the deeper weed edges too. And that's probably the big time MVP. I mean, blades, yeah, they were definitely pretty good. I think, mostly this goes with just guiding a bunch and other people ahead of me throwing blades, but I actually didn't catch my first fish on blades until like August 16th, I think, this year, personally. And it was on Huntsie Tail. Yeah, I know. I lost a few. Lost a few fish for sure. A couple of good ones. And and it was a blind figure eight. I think it was like 10 minutes before sunset or maybe after sunset. It was dark and I did a full figure eight and I was about to pull the bait out of the water and it was just there. It already had the bait halfway down its mouth and set the hook for me pretty much. So I got really lucky there. And I don't know why that is, but that would probably be the MVP is the Deuce. I don't know why. I tried a lot. We did give some pretty darn good action on the pit bulls, but it was not the Dusa is what really took reign. But what was the other one, Max? Like the bait that
least valuable.
Least valuable.
DFL, throw it out.
Get rid of
maybe,
it.
Maybe not throw it out, but just put it on ice for a little bit.
We ain't.
Because deuces ever, were not deuces for us were not great last year.
Not until September. I think all of a sudden, after like a little bit of not getting much on tubes and dogs, I finally switched to a deuce in September last year, and then got some fish, and then got into more of the season of suckers and trolling. But this year, yeah, I know exactly what you mean. The least valuable bait, which I will never not use, is the freaking tube. That thing absolutely stunk this year. Caught a fish on the second day of the season, and then not until like 2 weeks ago in my boat, which is atrocious. Not even the tube, the Ninja tube and the Monster tube took like half of the fish last year. So, and this year they have like four. Well, I guess counting some of the preseason fish, because you got one down in Cave and on one. So, but still, it's kind of crazy. Haven't even hit double digits of tube fish, which is outrageous. That is unfortunate, but even though I just got some more rigs, I'm going to be rigging some up here shortly. So tubes are just going on ice for a little bit. They'll be back. They'll be back.
I'm kind of glad you struggled on tubes this year, because that's one bait that I've told you this before. I cannot catch on that thing. I think I caught like three on them last year, and I gave them a solid run.
Damn. Well, I'm going to get some fresh ones rigged up, and when we get out in the boat on Monday, it'll stink, but I'll leave the deuces behind and maybe use one of your deuces if it's time. But I'll put some effort in with that tube and maybe catch a fish. We'll see. I don't
Show
know.
Show me the magic.
Got to find the one that dances correctly. That's always the key. The ones that were doing that for me have been absolutely demolished, and I haven't really replaced them. So I'm ready to do that now.
Brian, I think everyone's going to be curious as to what your MVP and least favorite baits are. So, please enlighten us here. Now his internet's out.
My sample size is going to be obviously much smaller than Taylor and Gus, so take this with a grain of salt.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What's up?
Your
Wi-Fi is terrible right now. All right, so for mine, obviously I don't have as big of a sample size as Taylor and Gus, so take with a grain of salt, but I think
they would regardless.
My MVP, from the time I was on the boat this year, especially early in the year, I would say the pit bull. I caught fish on it. I think everybody I've been in the boat with has caught fish on it, and some really good fish. And I was a critic of it to begin the year. I didn't think it was much of a change of pace from the mag dog or rag dog. But it does swim well. It looks great. And for whatever reason, it worked. Maybe those fish would have been caught on a mag dog had I been throwing it. Whatever. Don't overthink it. Good bait. And my DFL bait, worst bait of the year. I mean, maybe at least to this point, crankbaits have been very underwhelming. And I don't want to say the worst bait because I still love it. But I've not caught a flat-tail fish this year.
Wow.
And I'm not giving up on it. I think this fall might present an opportunity for it. But the days are winding down for that bait to perform. It's kind of been the year of the prop baits, the noisemakers. We'll see. Every bait ebbs and flows, though. That flat-tail, I still swear by it. Just losing a little conf.
Mm. Hate to hear that from a guy that just had a whole shrine of flap tails in his bedroom.
How about you, Max? What do you got up top and on the bottom?
I mean, a lot of mine are probably pretty consistent with Gus, since he's who I spend most of the time in the boat with. So I would echo deuces for whatever reason this year. Just really were a front runner. Even when I went out and fished solo, deuces were great. You know, bucktail stuff, as Taylor was talking about. I mean, this year for us, for me at least, was crazy for bucktails. I mean, I don't think I've had a year where I caught as many fish on bucktails, whether they're bangers, just your standard like double eights. That IC7 came into play a good bit for me. I really liked that bucktail, that presentation. As far as bucktails go, though, like double tens used to be my kind of go-to size and profile for bucktails, and I haven't caught a fish on a double ten this year, which is kind of weird. And then, as far as least favorite bait, I mean, I kind of am with you, Brian. Topwater was like my absolute favorite way to fish, and I threw it under some pretty prime conditions, and I have not yet caught a fish on topwater this year, now that I'm thinking about it. So, hopefully that changes this next week when I'm up. But yeah, that was a total downer for me. I mean, I threw a good amount of top water early in the morning when I go up by myself. Really have no action. And then it was like in that 9:30 to 10 a.m. window, all of a sudden I'd throw, can switch over to the bucktail and then start moving fish. So yeah, that's kind of, I guess, my little rundown. But I mean, obviously I think, as Taylor said, I think the topwater bite could get really good here. What do you think, Taylor? Like during this cool down is kind of be kind of when you're targeting as far as topwater stuff goes.
Yeah, absolutely. And anytime you have a cool down in either August, September, whatever it is, it's lights out top water, and not necessarily in just overcast skies either. I mean, we've been catching fish on top water when you shouldn't be throwing it, according to what everything that you see is. So yeah, I think it'll really light up. Going back to the Dusa thing, since everybody's been smashing on mids. You guys said last time around, you guys don't really throw the minis very much. Did you guys get to those at all this year or no?
Got one fish on a mini this year, I believe.
Yeah.
I think I threw it in a cold front in July and got a, it was a small fish, but that was it. No, didn't really. Oh, that Grayson, the 13-year-old I was talking about, he was throwing it around and he had a few fish up. Otherwise, I know we talked about in April and we did not really fully follow through on that and just
I
threw
mean,
our
we bought a
bread
few
and
during our interview with you,
yeah,
and
we use them a lot.
we used them. We would, like, for me at least, like, I would be like, oh, this is gonna be killer, and then I'd start with it, and then it would just kind of feel too small or kind of weird. It's like I gotta throw something a little bigger. So I feel like if I would have given it more time, it would have been good, but I always like moved on. It's kind of that same thing where it's like, well, what are they biting on? It's like, oh, black and silver bucktail. It's like, well, what are you throwing? Black and silver bucktail. So
Right.
I don't know if I think they looked a lot better than I thought they were going to. Like exactly how you talked about it back in April, of how you can get them to kind of dance and like really get through the cover just because it's such a smaller profile. I was like, damn, this thing could be deadly.
And then threw it in the pile in the corner of
And then threw it in the pile in the corner of
I
the
just took that
boat.
advice and just shoved it down
How did you do on them, Taylor?
the trash. Damn it.
I was asking because I actually didn't, early in the year I caught on them quite often, but after that I actually haven't hardly thrown them at all since probably June. So I mean, the mid's just been absolutely getting wrecked. So why go away from something that's doing it for you?
True.
Right.
So, Taylor, you've been making some videos as of late. How's the feedback been? How's it been making some of those videos? I mean, I've been really enjoying them. That one particular one that I thought was really interesting was the one you caught, nice fish on that Husky Dusa that I think
Yeah.
like came up and either ate once and then didn't commit fully or grab the tail or something crazy, and then you pitch back at it and it
Yeah,
ate like fully.
that was absolutely wild. Just unreal. But that was the first video that I made. I'm no technology guy or YouTube star, but I figured that was the first like actual video that I got that I thought was worth showing to people. I mean, it was just a cool kind of, how it all unfolded. But just try to tell a story and kind of what my mindset was, with that fish, being that it was so active that I had it already eat. My kind of going back to those fish is just to upsize, where a lot of people say downsize. But if you have a fish that swirls hard on a bait or tries to get a bait and just doesn't touch hooks, usually upsizing and that same bait usually gets them fired up, or that's your only shot at them. So that was the mindset there. But yeah, I'm not going to claim to be really good at video editing and all that, but it's fun putting out the little clips and just kind of, this is what my mindset was, this is what the conditions was, and just try to help people, you know, understand stuff. And I did one that was reviving a fish that had absolutely choked a 8-inch Poseidon. We worked with that fish for like an hour, but I thought it was important to show people like it's not always perfect. It's not always, you know, what you see on TV, and that this is the stuff that you might come across. And it's good for people to see that stuff so that when it does happen to them, they kind of know how to handle it. And maybe you save a fish or two here and there. So little stuff like that, I think, is cool to put out videos. And obviously it helps for like a little promotion for your own business and all that good stuff. I mean, like, you know, the Muskies on Tap stuff for Gus and whatnot, it's all part of it. So just a way to put out more content and hopefully people enjoy it. But I don't expect that to be an angling anarchy or something like that. So yeah, that was a freaking wild fish though. It was, I'll just tell a story of it, but that fish, so I was moving along like this, probably in like 13, 14 foot of water, casting up over like an 8-foot weed hump, like main lake structure. And I seen on side imaging, outline of the fish, perfect shape. And I'm like, well, that's what I'm going to have to try for. So pitched a cast over to her. I think it was like my third cast in that vicinity. And she ended up coming up underneath it. And I went around and around with her a couple of times. And then she came up and ate a mid Medusa, but I set the hook and basically just pulled her past the boat. And she ended up, I pulled the Medusa right out of her mouth. Well, she actually ripped off all three tails of the Medusa. And I'm like trying to figure eight with just a little chode on the end of my leader, you know? And I'm like, well, that's not going to cut it. So I seen her kind of take off or whatever. So then, I get in the box and I pull out a Husky Medusa, thinking that was going to be the only way I was going to get her to go again. And cast it a couple of times where I thought she was. And then because I'm sitting in one spot, my side scan basically just got like a big blurb, you know, with a big shadow. I'm like, well, there she is over there. So pitched a cast over there, ripping through. And I mean, 10 feet from the boat, she came and just inhaled it. It was pretty awesome. I got most of the whole eat and everything on film, and just a really cool kind of circumstance and how that catch unfolded. So I had to make a video of it. It's a cool thing to do nowadays, I guess.
Oh yeah, that's what awesome. The cool kids are doing. No, it was a sweet video. I really enjoyed watching that. I haven't really heard much of that upsizing technique. And
yeah, that's interesting.
I can't say we've really tried that. I think the only thing I can equate that to on our end is maybe raising a fish on blades where the blade is, I don't know, 8 inches long, let's say. And then on a cast back or just a little bit later, we get it on rubber, which is definitely of significantly bigger proportions, but nothing where like, oh, raise it on a Medusa, it's hot, and think to throw something really big. So that's pretty cool to see. And one thing I was going to add that I really like that you're doing some videos, Taylor, is that the stuff you have is just absolutely spot on, because you're out there basically every single day. So you know what's going on. You're not putting out a video every once in a while because you only fish every once in a while. Like you're putting out true information, especially, you know, the unfortunate side. If you get a fish that chokes a bait, it's inevitable. It happens. It's going to happen even to the people who don't get to fish that often. You know, eventually that's going to happen. You're going to get a fish that's, you know, that's, it's just what happens with rubber baits. Every once in a while, they truly think that thing is real and take it down the hatch, and you got to know how to operate in that thing and get it back swimming to be caught again and grow bigger. So I think that's really important information to get out there. Definitely enjoy that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's something that doesn't get talked about enough. I think more so it's all about the catch and look what I did kind of stuff, which I'm not really for that. It's kind of getting information out is what I want to do, and helping people catch more fish, little tips and tricks here and there. you know, how to revive a muskie, how to take care of them. If you are putting them on a bump board, you know, that just be careful with them, and that it is what it is, you know. But just to, you're better off to explain how to do the things versus not show them at all, and then somebody, you know, knocks one in the head, and that's one less fish for somebody else to catch. So,
right. So you talk about the video about reviving the fish. You know, what were some of the things, I guess, you did? Say somebody's listening to this and they just started fishing rubber this year, and they that happens to them. So they you know, net the muskie, they don't see the bait at all because it's just gone. You know, right away, what are some of the things that you're looking to do to kind of help expedite the process, get the fish back upright, all those types of things? You know, what's kind of going on in your head right when you see that fish hit the bag with no sign of Medusa or Poseidon or, you know, Pitbull or whatever in sight?
Yeah. Well, sometimes it's not as bad as it looks. It all depends on where those hooks are dug in or whatnot. If you get them in the tongue, they're pretty much toast no matter what you do. That's just the sad part of it. But no, if you get one that's got a bait choke deep, always obviously keep it in the water, but you should have your tools handy, whether it's a hook cutter, long nose pliers, that sort of thing, jaw spreaders if you need them. And then just work as fast as you can. Get in there, cut everything you can. You know, hooks are cheap, not a big deal. Muskie lives aren't. Cut all hooks, you know, get everything out, get the pieces out that you can, and then put her back in the water and just let her sit on her own without messing with her. You know, if you don't think she's doing well, don't take a photo of that fish, just throw it back, you know. And that's kind of the deal with this. I mean, it was on a client trip, it was the guy's personal best muskie, and it's like, hey man, we're gonna do whatever we can to revive the fish. If we don't get a picture, that's kind of too bad, you know. And he understood that, and he was really good about it. I think most people are. But yeah, do whatever you can for the fish. And then, so what we had done with that specific one, I actually thought she would be okay. And the guy himself went to let it go, and I was like, hey, just turn her a little bit, she'll tense up, and then let her go. Well, once he let the fish, you know, swim free, we're kind of in big waves too, but once he let her go, she did like a little twirly, you know, belly up kind of thing. So as soon as she did that, you kind of go into life-saving mode. But we went over, netted her, put her back in the net. I had her, and then I was actually trying to revive her just because, you know, I have more experience with it than what the first-time fisherman or first-time muskie angler did. And had her facing into the wind so that, you know, the water's going through her gills, you know, front to back. Otherwise, you'll suffocate them if you're going back and forth. But had her sitting there, and she would not stay upright on her own. We were kind of fighting against the wind and the waves and whatnot. So as I was holding the fish in the water, I had the guy turn on the live well and get some water in there. And then we ended up putting the fish in the live well to get that recirculated water and oxygen into her, and then we actually just held her upright in the live well, and then we actually took her to a little back bay that was calm, so she wasn't, you know, fighting against the waves inside the live well too with the boat rocking and stuff. So took her to a little calm spot and just held her up in the live well with the water recirculating until she was able to sit upright on her own, and we left her in there for, I mean, it was like 20 minutes, and then grabbed her out quickly and just set her in the water, didn't hold her, didn't do nothing, just let her go. And she just sat on top of the water. But in this instance, when you have them and they're just up like that, you just got to make sure that you stay around them with your boat, just so like jet skiers and wake boats and other fishermen or whatever aren't zinging through and, you know, take a jump off of her pretty much and get her with a prop. But that's basics of keeping them alive and doing what you can as an angler. That's kind of our responsibility. So
one real quick thing I wanted to note on what you said, and I think it's something that might be a little bit of a misconception to some people. But you see people when they release a muskie will kind of push them back and forth, you know, like pull, push and pull, push and pull. And I think the more I've learned about that, obviously over the last few years, it's much better to actually just let that fish sit nose up into the wind and not really be, you know, trying to maneuver it around too much, and almost just kind of letting it regain its strength on your own, as long as you're holding it upright. Would you agree with that, or anything of that nature? You got anything to add on that?
No, I think you're 100% correct. The only thing is, you know, just to get them to kind of come to a little quicker, I do kind of rotate my wrist just a little bit, just to kind of, you know, flare their side, and then you'll see them tense up. That's when you kind of know they're coming to. But yeah, if you just leave them sit, they'll regain their what they got going on, and they'll go off then.
Gotcha.
For sure. Yeah, I was going to quick add that too, because I know you touched on that, but I was going to kind of emphasize that as well. One thing I was going to say at the start of that, which I don't know if you've tried this at all, Taylor, and I definitely try to, especially if a fish has something choked and you know it's going to take a second. You know, for starters, ideally, if you have somebody that could help, it's always, you know, nice, because you only have so many hands. I mean, typically you're holding the muskie with one hand, so you're already down one. And if you got somebody else helping with either a jaw spreaders, if need be, or the hook cutters or the pliers in there, that definitely helps. But if you can't, I haven't like found a perfect way to do this, but almost to like eliminate having a fish vertical for too long, and it kind of sucks on the back a little bit. I end up being hunched over a lot more, is I don't lift that fish up very far out of that bag, like, you know, above the gunwale or anything. I'm keeping it like way down in the bag where half of the fish is still folded down in there and in the water. So it feels like you're lifting the head up so you can get down in the mouth to get the bait out. But it feels like I'm not putting as much stress on the fish when pulling vertical. I don't know if you've ever done that or noticed that. I don't know, like, how much that exactly helps, but I've been trying to like pay attention to that. If I have to deal with the fish for very long, or maybe push them up against the bag so it's not full gravity vertical, you know, while taking the bait out. So I don't know if you've seen that at all, or.
Yeah, just keep them as much in the water as you can. It's less weight, especially. I don't believe that it matters so much in your like 30 to, you know, 30 and, you know, mid 30 inch fish. They just don't have the weight and the density of the bigger fish. But if you get a mid 40s fish, I mean, that's a lot of weight, you know, on that fish's spine and everything. So yeah, definitely keep the most of the weight of the fish in the bag or in the water, just to reduce that. But yeah.
Sweet. Yeah. And also with the hook cutting thing, I've definitely had to cut hooks and feel like I've had them out long enough where I just set them down again and then wait for them to revive for a second, and then go in there with the pliers and pluck out the cut hook, you know, find that piece. Cause
yep.
Another thing, you said it, but I just, again, want to emphasize it for people, is that when you cut the hooks, look for those barbs and the part that you left in the fish, cause they don't really just fall out like what some people think. They definitely don't. I mean, you hear a lot of stories about people catching walleyes, pike, muskies with a jig in their mouth that's rusted out, that's obviously been there for quite a while, not just like the day before or something like that. So be sure to grab your barbs out once you cut hooks. And I think that kind of covers the whole getting a fish unhooked and going through all the precautions. I think
we did husky handling 101.
Yeah,
you did a great job there, Taylor. We haven't really gone through something like that in a long time, so for maybe some of the newer listeners, that was very beneficial. Maybe some of the people who don't go out as often, good to brush up on your stuff.
We learned a lot of those lessons kind of the hard way. You know, it's like you do it, you know, when you're starting out, it's just different. You know, I remember when we first really like started to cut hooks, like we went back and looked at a video and like, sure shit, there's a hook still on the top of the gill that we never, you know, got. So it's just like you kind of learn from those little things, and as you kind of keep building your Rolodex of catches, you get better and better at it. But it's always nice to hear from someone like, you know, yourself and Gus kind of talking about the process, because it's a pretty big important piece of the puzzle. And after you catch a big fish, you're all jacked up. You know, sometimes it's hard to hard to slow down and like be like, okay, like, all right, what do I got to do now? You know what I mean?
Right. And I just one more thing to kind of emphasize too is, so just an example, but we stuck a 44 on a 10 inch Suic, and you know how Suic's hooks will always lock together, you know, the second and first and whatnot. This fish actually had right in the corner of her mouth, those hooks were locked together and both hooks were dug into the corner at the same time. And then the back hook was actually like hooked like right near her eye. So in an instance like that, yeah, I could have took the pliers and just ripped them out. But how much damage do you actually do to that fish, whether it be in its eye or actually its mouth itself? So just if you're ever in doubt or whatnot, just cut the hooks. I mean, a hook is very, very cheap considering, you know, a 44 inch fish has taken 20 years to get to be that size. So it's not a big deal to throw a new hook on a split ring. That's just something to emphasize there.
Yeah, I completely agree. And if you look in your tackle box and you know what you like to throw, so like, I mean, this is getting a little more technical and I've been trying to get better so that I don't have an accumulation of a shit ton of hooks that I actually never end up using. And definitely don't want people to make the same mistake as me, is look at the baits that you have. And like, if you don't know that, you know, identification of the hook, maybe whether it's VMC or Mustad or something like that, don't be afraid to ask myself, maybe Taylor knows, or go to your local bait shop, buy the ones that come with them. I've definitely noticed that a lot of baits work specifically well, especially topwater. I've, you know, that's one bait, maybe definitely dive and rise sometimes, or crankbaits can ruin the action a little bit. But just like buying the hooks
gliders,
that you use the most, like time. I think it's Suic,
yeah,
is what
gliders for sure.
Yeah. Oh, that's, thank you. Yeah. Gliders. Suic is 5-aught BMC, I think. And I don't know what the name of it is, but I think that's what like a 9 and a 10 inch Suic do. Maybe it's a 4-aught and the 9, 5-aught on the 10 and 12s, for example, you know, and same with, yeah, I don't know, but that I found to be pretty important, because I definitely have some hooks laying around now where I'm like, okay, I actually really haven't found a bait that I use to go with that style and size. So pay attention to that. Save you some money for when you got to cut hooks.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that was good. Glad to hear you guys take us to school a little bit there, Brian. I can tell you were, you know, fully engaged there in that conversation. I want to move on to the a little bit maybe more fun. Well, if that's a very important topic, and it's good to talk about, but we're entering into fall here, which in northern Wisconsin I think everyone is just kind of associates with like big fish time of year. So kind of obviously we talked about the first cool down, but what we have you on right now, I'm assuming you're going to be doing a good bit of fishing here through the fall. You know, after that first cool down kind of transpires and the fall starts to set in, you know, what are you transitioning to? What are you looking for? You know, when that kind of turnover, pre-turnover, maybe time frame, and then maybe a little bit after turnover. But like, what are some things that you're identifying moving off the summer pattern here?
Definitely like the pre-turnover stuff is all, the greenest weeds in the lake is huge. Wherever you find bait fish, and they're going to be shallow, right, tight to those weeds. They kind of fall off the rocks a little bit. But yeah, green weeds, and I would target those with either gliders running slower, big blade bucktails, whether it's a IC-10, those do really well for me, late September, early October. Shallow mag dogs do really, really well. Just that big profile and just being able to hang them over top of the weed beds. I mean, a lot of times it's, you know, even 4 to 8 foot weeds. So something that can keep up, you know, and or like in the instance of the big blades, it actually pushes those weeds out of the way with, you know, that big, you know, vortex of water going around them. It'll just scoot them right out of the way. So those are good baits for them as well. And then top water too, through that pre-turnover period is still really, really good. I know a lot of people start putting those away once you get to October, but I've had a really good topwater bite into that early October period as well.
Interesting. And real quick, speed. I think this time of year, are you, what are you honing in on speed wise? Are you same retrieve as like a July, August deal, or are you speeding things up? Are you slowing things down? What would kind of make you do one or the other when you're out there?
Well, the big blades themselves kind of make you slow down on their own,
sure.
If I'm being honest. But no, usually you're going just a little bit slower, but not incredibly slow like you would post turnover. You know, with gliders, basically you can't run them slow enough. But just working baits at a steady, you know, a steady retrieve, slow rolling blades. Those big shallow mags, they just hang right in their face. I mean, you don't have to work those hard at all. If you work them hard, they, a lot of times they'll roll over, they'll blow out of the water. So it's just a steady pull with those. You're not doing like the slack line rips to get them to hop side to side like you are with a mid deucer or something at this, you know, at this stage of the game. But yeah, just slow it down a little bit. Your 10 and 12 inch Suics, I actually just throttle them on 12 inch Suics once you get to this time of the year as well. So that's I'm hoping that the Suics come back in style again here as the cold kind of sets in. But yeah,
I'm definitely hoping so on that Suic front too, because it feels like we're just back into a summer pattern here with low 70 water temps, just blades and rubber with a little bit of top water mixed in. It feels like you said, August out there. And switching up to jerkbaits would be very good. One thing before maybe we ask about post turnover, what you would maybe switch to, pre turnover and running suckers. What's your game plan there? Do you usually try and run two? Because pre turnover, typically you're still fishing kind of shallow, and maybe you're kind of going through a bunch of spots, or maybe you're sticking to one area. Because taking out and going to different spots is a lot of work with some suckers. Are you running two? Or are you running one? Do you prefer the bobber rod or the down rod? You know, maybe walk us through that pre-turnover sucker rundown you like to do.
Yeah, I actually, for a short while here when we did have the cold front, I actually ran suckers for a little bit.
Interesting.
I think it was the first week of September or so, but I actually took basically a normal sucker rig and clipped the farthest hook off, and then you only have one treble, you know, within the nose clip. And that seems to work really well because you're usually using like a 9 to an 11 inch sucker in the early part of the, you know, cool down. When you get that, you know, low 60s, mid 60s temps, you can run those smaller suckers and they still get bit. We caught a couple on them. And then it warmed up here, so obviously we stopped doing that because the suckers will just die dragging behind the boat. But usually I'll only run one sucker during the pre-turnover time, just because otherwise if you have two out, it does get to be a pain in the butt because you are fishing shallow weeds, and sometimes you get right up on top of them and you're just snagging suckers and pulling grass out, and they're just, it's a mess. So usually I try to just run one on a bobber, probably like 20 to 30 feet behind the boat. And in the time that you're moving along the structure, you know, 0.5 miles an hour, whatever, usually if you have a follow, it's only a 2 seconds or 3 seconds before that sucker is right in that fish's face anyhow. So that's kind of the game plan.
For sure.
Do you,
oh, go ahead, Brent.
You can go.
Oh, I was just going to say, yeah, for sure, for keeping that sucker close, because pre-turnover time frame, you get a little more follows than post-turnover because they're, you know, water's a little bit warmer. They're a little bit more active, and you want to be sure that that sucker is still close for them to see once you bring them to the boat. But way back at the beginning, I was going to ask this, but we moved into something else that we're talking about. When you're talking about right now, like for something very current conditions with this first cool down coming, I know maybe you'd run some suckers and or just run a sucker and get up into the slop. When you say you're getting up into shallow water and maybe not caring about that outer edge, do you mind if you're just sitting over the top of weeds, casting to shallower weeds, or are you trying to be mindful of those edges and not sit maybe on top of the fish? Or are you not even worried? Like, are you thinking a lot of the fish are going to be shallow, like really shallow that you're trying to target? Because, you know, sometimes I've always thought about that based on a spot where some I'd like to be running from the outer edge. But some of these flats are so far out, say from a shore, like multiple cast lengths, where there's some weeds that taper out into three, and then it goes out into five, and then maybe the deeper edge is out in 7, 8 feet of water. But if you sit out in 7, 8 feet of water on that edge, you can't reach 3 feet where the fish might be. Would you go sit up on 5 feet of water on weeds to cast to more weeds, or how are you running that game plan?
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's kind of day by day, you know. I mean, every single day things change, but like right now we've pulled fish out of 3 foot of weeds, even though the weed bed is, you know, and starts in 8 or 9 feet. So usually what I would do is make one pass on the outside, trying to do what you would basically do in like midsummer, you know, when you're staying just off the weed lines and casting, you know, 10, 20 feet over top it, ripping through, and then kind of dropping as you get out of the weeds. But you make one pass through like that. If you're seeing fish doing that, or if you're seeing fish on side imaging outside of you, whatever it may be, obviously stick with that pattern. But if you're not seeing the fish, it does not hurt to go into water that you've already gone through on the outside and pitch that slop stuff and, you know, get right up in there. Because I mean, what, yesterday I would bet you, so we raised 9 fish yesterday, I believe. I think 7 of them came out of like 4 foot slop, you know, where there was a weed line on the outside, but we were into the thick of it and casting basically up into 3 foot of milfoil, and those fish were coming out of there. So you gotta let the fish tell you what they're gonna do.
What's throughout the fall, as we get closer to turnover, what are some of the factors that you may look at or that might point you in a direction to either go fish a smaller staying body of water or to go tackle like a deep clear system?
Yeah, that's honestly, once the fall sets in and the cold water starts coming, I usually switch to a lot more of the clear bodies of water, just because that big fish potential is there. I believe those fish are more apt to be caught in those clear systems, you know, that time of year, just because of where they're positioned and, you know, how they kind of suck into the weeds and whatnot. So I'm usually more apt to go to a clear body of water. Obviously, if you have, you know, a really, really bright sunny day, high skies, nothing really going on, those big fish probably aren't going to be moving around quite as well as, you know, your fish that are on the smaller staying bodies. But most of the time I fish a lot of smaller bodies of water through the summertime. And then if I do get a, you know, nice overcast day, I'll hit the deeper clear bodies. But fall time is usually about the clear bodies of water to me. And then once you get into the turnover period, I actually try to stay away from the lakes that are turning over. You usually have a period where you can hit the small ones while the big lakes are turning over, and vice versa. So you can kind of stay out of that whole downtime period, you know, fishing flowages or rivers or whatever you got to do, or bull hunting, you know, during that actual pre, you know, or during the actual turn.
Yeah.
Thanks. Yep.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. I think that's always that's kind of the fun game you can play up in the Vilas and Oneida County area, dealing with turnover, is like, you know, you're not just locked on one body of water. You know, you can kind of move around and play the turnover game a little bit better up there. I think you said that perfectly, where you can kind of time it where, you know, if you get on the water one day and you can tell all the signs are there of turnover, we'll talk about that when we get closer to turnover, you can just move down and fish something different that might be in a different stage. But yeah, I mean, let me think here. I mean, what do you guys, what else do you guys got for Taylor tonight? I mean, he's been generous enough to stick with us through multiple technical difficulties here. we really grinded one out here on a late Wednesday night. I think I am very excited. I will be able to get in the boat with you, Taylor, on Monday. So instead of watching you catch fish behind me this time when we're on the same body of water, we'll be in the same boat. And you'll probably be catching fish behind me in the boat, but that's, you know, better than better than watching you catch it from, you know, 100 yards away.
Nah, don't worry. I'll give Taylor a tube. He won't catch nothing with it then. <We'll be> safe.
You can have the one spot.
Okay, yeah, I appreciate it. I have like a little make-a-wish kid up there in the front of the boat.
Oh, fantastic.
Absolutely. We're going to make your dreams come true.
Oh, I appreciate it. I've been on ice now since I guess we got out a little bit on Labor Day, but I'm itching, man. I can't wait to get up there. I think the weather's just going to be dynamite. Looking forward to going chasing some trophies with you guys up there on Monday. Should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, before you sign off here, let's make sure everybody knows where to find you if you want to give your guide info out, maybe where they can see some of these videos that we've talked about to go watch those, get some more informational tips, tricks, all that good stuff. Let the people know where they can find the goods.
Yeah, it's Muskie Guaranteed Guide Service. I'm on Facebook. Otherwise, 715-490-5088 is the cell phone. You can call or text that, and I'll answer it when I can. The YouTube stuff is under Muskie Guarantee Guide Service as well. And then that's about it. I have an Instagram, but that's Muskie Guarantee Guide Service as well. But I don't get to that as often. I get a lot of like fake profiles and spam on Instagram, so I kind of stay off of that stuff.
You mean
But
those girls in the really low cut shirts aren't real that friend requested you?
no, they're not. They're not.
You're telling me
Stay away from
I've been
those.
getting scammed all these years? What
Yeah.
Yeah,
Cool. Well, yeah, like I said, looking forward to getting in the boat with you. Reach out to Taylor. And then Gus, I don't know if you want to do an outro or are we wrapping things here right now? What are you thinking?
let's wrap it up here now just 'cause it's getting late and I'm not, for those who are listening, whenever that is, apologies if it does come out Friday. Like we mentioned, this is late Wednesday night and I do have to get up early for a guide trip. We weren't able to schedule this one any earlier because back-to-back nights. I think Sunday I had a guide trip until late. Monday we had league banquet for Monday Night League. Tuesday I had a league banquet for Tuesday Night
All
League.
right, all right, all right. We
Yeah, I
get it.
know.
Popular
Excuses,
guy.
excuses.
Yada, yada, yada. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Where can they find you?
All right, they can find Muskies on Tap on Instagram.
Shut
Check
up.
that out. Shout out. Otherwise, my guide service is Suggs Fishing on Instagram and Facebook or www.suggsfishing.com. Check out that. Find all the details there. Otherwise, I think that's it. I don't know what do you have for availability this fall, Taylor, or maybe when you start opening your books for the 2025 season.
Yeah, not much left here. I think I got probably 4 October dates left, and then I won't book anything after, into November until we kind of see what the ice situation is. And it's kind of hard to set in a date when you don't know if you're going to be ice fishing or musky fishing. So otherwise I'll start booking again probably the end of November or December for next year's trips. I usually send out moon dates and whatnot to people that came with me the previous season, and then after that I make it available to newcomers and anybody that's willing to jump in the boat. So
Perfect. And if anyone wants to listen in on Taylor's backstory, how he got into muskie fishing, the reason for behind the name Muskie Guarantee Guide Service, just make sure you go back and listen to that first episode he was on. We kind of dive into all that good
episode
stuff in that one.
49.
Yeah. So I know we've picked up some listeners since then. So go give that one a spin as well. But yeah, without further ado, I think we'll let Brian put a bow on this one. If you want to take us away here, kid.
All
Let's
right,
hear
everybody.
it.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Muskies on Tap. Shout out to Taylor Flannery with the Muskie Guarantee Guide Service are coming on tonight. Dropping some absolute pearls in the Muskie game. We got a bunch of big things coming up. Gus in a big tournament this weekend. The boys in the PMTT the following weekend. We'll break that down next week's episode. Great fall fishing around the corner. Load up on that good suck while you can. Those suckers are going to go quick. Catch you on the next one.